if you want to be a professional and get paid and paid well for what you do, then it's about more than just writing for fun. It's about more than the art. It's got to be about the science too. So,
welcome to the Creative Chats Podcast with Mike Brennan. Welcome, friends, to another episode of Creative Chats. It's the podcast for artists, makers, and content creators, where we talk about creativity, the creative process, and story. If you'd like to connect with me, you can do so over on Instagram. I'm at Mike Bone. And I would love to have you join us in our community over on Facebook. It's Daily Creative Habit. And if you go to dailycreativehabit.com, it'll forward you right to our request page to join our group. It's free. There are a lot of people in there who have a wide variety of creative expressions, all with the desire to show up more consistently for their creativity and their craft. So if that's you, we would love to have you join us. Now, for this week's episode, I have a guest who is a friend of mine. But before we get to that, I just want to say Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. I so appreciate you taking time out to listen and to join our conversations, to be a part of this creative movement that's happening, where people are showing up, doing their work, getting it out to the people who need it, and making an impact on the world around them. That's a special thing. Not everybody does that. And I think you probably know that. So I'm very grateful for you, grateful for the time that you set aside to listen to this podcast. I hope that you continue to find encouragement and insights for your own journey. And I would love to hear from you. If you you want to share any, you know, impactful moments that you've had or anything that's been really helpful from this podcast, from some guests in the past or even today's guest, I would love to hear from you and just celebrate with you. So for this week, it is my friend, Jeff Coleman, who is a direct response copywriter and brand strategist. And he helps online entrepreneurs launch 6- and 7-figure digital products. He is a great guy who I've just enjoyed getting to know over this past year. And he's worked with really influential thought leaders and just really does quality work and is a quality guy. I know you're going to hear that in our conversation today. He's also the host of his own podcast show, and it's called The Psychology of Copywriting. So really interesting. He dives more into kind of like the science and the logical side of things. You know, I tend to be a little bit more on the conversational and feely side of things. So, you know, it was a good time getting together and just talking about some of that stuff and, you know, how we approach things differently. So I'm going to get out of the way and let us get into this conversation. Enjoy this conversation, this creative chat with Jeff Coleman. Well, welcome, Jeff. I'm excited to have you here on the Creative Chats podcast. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah. So, you know, I love getting to hang around with you now and getting to know you better and just learning more about your business, about your life, and excited for this interview to dive a little even deeper into that stuff. So appreciate what you do. And just for the sake of our listeners, can you just give us a little snapshot of who are you? What do you do?
Who am I? I mean, those are deep questions.
Yeah. If you want to lie down on the couch first, that's fine. You know,
my office used to have a couch. Now I just have a tiny little chair. I don't think it'll work. Super simple answer is I'm a copywriter, which means I'm not a lawyer who handles copyright, but I am a writer who handles emails and sales pages and things like that. So that's me professionally. But more importantly, I've got a wife, got 4 amazing boys. Way too much energy in my house with 4 boys running around. But yeah, that's a bit of who I am. That's the super simple answer. But I guess I define myself by what I am and who's in my life more than sure. Who I am. I don't know. But yeah, that's who I am.
Nice. So let's talk a little bit about creativity and how that showed up in your life. Like, do you remember vivid experiences by any means when you're a kid, maybe that, you know, you played a certain way or with certain things or had certain creative activities that stand out to you?
I remember just diving into writing. like making myself the hero in my own stories, where I'd like fill little, you know, those little, I don't know what you call them in the States, but they're like, little notebooks that you bring to school to practice writing and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Composition books.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
That I just fill those with stories of me playing hockey or me riding a bike or me on a team or me at school and I'd have friends in class draw the pictures or I'd draw the pictures, but then if they wanted to add in pictures, they could. So apparently writing became a communal activity to me, but I loved diving into taking my life and making it exceptional and extraordinary on the page. Not that my life was bad or anything. I just, childhood imagination where I became the hero of this epic hockey tournament, I guess, you know, that's where I'd escape to. Even playing was always, my play was always more imaginative than my friends' play. I'd get lost in the play and, you know, hide and seek in the dark, they'd turn the lights off and I'd be like, whoa, come on. I was playing here. I wasn't hiding. I was imagining. Come on. So I would just get lost. And it's interesting. I don't know if you saw this with your kids or if you've seen this with your kids. My oldest does the same thing where he doesn't so much get lost in the play, but he's so disinterested in anyone else doing something that's not imaginative or creative. He's a bit stubborn too. He doesn't want to play if they just don't want to do what he does. But that's mostly because if it's not being imaginative, it's not being creative, if it's not escaping into another world, it just doesn't interest him at all. So it's been really interesting and frustrating to see. Oh, that's what I was like. Oh, that's really annoying. But no, it was childhood was just full of imagination and writing, a lot of writing.
What were the stories that maybe inspired you or caused you to even think about making these stories where you were the hero in your own stories?
I have no idea. I think it really was, if I were laying on the psychologist's couch, I think it would be that it's not that my life wasn't great. It was, but I was, really small, really shy, really easy to pick on. And so I think it was just such a great way to escape into the world where I wasn't, a victim, where I was the hero. I think that's my guess, is that's why it was so powerful. So, alluring to me. It was just, I could create my own world where, you know, the moment I got home, life was good again, but school wasn't always easy. Academically it was easy, but socially it was not. I think being able to escape like that was just really important for me being able to survive. And I make it sounds like my childhood was horrible. It wasn't. It was amazing. But I'm guessing that's why escape into story was such an important part of growing up for me.
Mm-hmm. What were the stories that really you felt yourself drawn towards?
The ones that I still remember are mostly the ones I mentioned. It was actually, I still got it up behind me somewhere. I wrote when I was 8, back on my shelf there. It was just called The Hockey Tournament. And it was me combining my love of that particular sport, hockey, and my love of watching, you know, pro athletes, and then combining that to, oh, I was as good as them, but I was like 8 or 9. So just dominating the tournament and making my team win and all that. So that's the one that I remember the most, was called The Hockey Tournament. There was one about BMX biking, which was based mostly off my favorite movie, Rad, 1986. Nice. Do you know Rad?
I've heard of it.
Okay. Most people don't know it, but that one was where I basically became Crew Jones and was the hero of that BMX epic story. I remember ones about the Easter Bunny and things like that. I think it was mostly about me having great accomplishments in things that I really enjoyed already, like biking and sports.
Yeah.
But where I became the hero and I was the one that everyone lifted up at the end of the story. And So it wasn't like I was writing some, oh, there was one actually, I just remembered, about an old haunted castle, but most of them were about where I was, you know, the hero saving the day, but it was also a team activity in most cases, even the BMX based on Rad the movie, you know, there was a team around him helping him succeed. So in my adaptation, there was a team around me helping me succeed. But again, I was the one winning. So
yeah. Well, besides Rad, were there other movies or books that kind of fed into your love for story and imagination?
Definitely the Goonies.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember any stories that I wrote that were like the Goonies or inspired by the Goonies, but there were Big Trouble in Little China was also, that was my brother's favorite movie. And so we would alternate every weekend. We'd go rent either Big Trouble in Little China or Rad, like literally every weekend we'd alternate for years. But I couldn't, there was a scene or two that I couldn't watch. So he had to cover my eyes for me and he'd tell me when it was over. Which is interesting in itself, cause I don't remember very many gentle moments with my older brother. Yeah. So I think even taking bits of those epic adventures and scary stories and things, they make their way into story, but not as specific as Rad or hockey, but you know, little bits and pieces, even into that haunted castle one, I'm sure had bits of Big Trouble in Little China in there. It was mostly, I liked escaping into movies, but I never really, other than Rad, because my life became Rad, the movie, but at least in my mind, but it was never really taking that story and then writing my own. It was mostly just, oh, you know, my life is like this. I want to write it even better. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure movie elements made their way in, but not following that specific story arc in my own writing.
Right. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So with this as kind of a foundation for you, was this something then that you pursued as far as education, or like, what did that look like for you, you know, in your kind of journey early on?
Yeah, I think so. I mentioned being bullied, and this is all, I don't mean this to be me on the couch, but at a point at around when I was like 11 or 12, I stopped writing and I started being the class clown. I started being the goof. And so I took up drama and improv and stuff like that, but which is creative too, but mm-hmm. It wasn't really what I'd loved for so many years. And I think it was, again, it was a way for me to escape just differently. And again, life was good, but bullying was real as well. So all of a sudden I became the class clown and the bullies became, you know, they wanted to hang out with me instead of pick on me. So so I dropped writing for, probably 10, 15 years. And never really truly picked it up again until recently, where I start, you know, now I write stories to help people make money, in their marketing, but, which is fine. It's not a horrible activity, but, So I dropped out of writing for a long, long, long time. And I think it was to escape that bullying, but it went to the improv, type of space where it was still creative. It was still fun. I got to see people laugh instead of just hope that they, you know, enjoyed what I'd written, even though nobody ever read them, except for my parents. But so I think I enjoyed getting that rise out of seeing people laugh at what I was doing. Affected the grades in high school a little bit, unfortunately, where I was more interested in getting the laugh than getting the grade. But did that answer the question?
Yeah. Okay. And just wondering now, so if you've moved into that space and then you've left writing behind, like, what was your career track looking like at that point? And how did you, like, catch us up to where you are now versus where you were when you were a kid in love with these stories, writing these stories? You know, everybody has that journey that they go on. Fill us in a little bit of what that looked like for you.
Yeah. So in my late teens, I all of a sudden started to get really interested in ministry, like the church world. So we can share that in common, I guess.
But, yeah.
Where that really became... all consuming where, you know, I went to Christian college and then made my way to or Christian university, liberal arts Christian university, but then moved over to Bible college instead because I had a more specific degree that I wanted. And then, yeah, I spent extra years at school, basically trying to hone the craft of being in ministry. What I discovered is that I was way too immature to be a leader. So probably came from those years of improv. But so I went instead, did some mission work, traveled the world. I forget how many plane rides I was on in a year, but it was like 20 something, which was impressive for me at the time. So basically tried to grow up until I was ready for ministry. And then when I was pushing, I guess it was mid-20s, late-20s, where finally it was, I think I'm ready, and found a part-time ministry gig that then led into full-time and into associate pastor role. So then initially I worked in the nonprofit world. I kind of skipped that part. So I graduated college, went into the nonprofit world instead. So fundraising, things like that, which had a lot of transferable skills. I was working with a lot of volunteers. I was, speaking to the board, coordinating schedules. There was no teaching or leadership necessarily, but a lot of the other stuff was good prep work for church work. And then when it felt time, or when others started to see that it might be time, I guess the better way of putting it, then the church ministry kind of, the opportunities kind of started to come then. So then I got a bit of that creative opportunity back where, you know, you're creating studies or writing sermons. It's kind of a bit of getting that writing back, finding a way to communicate something in a way that interests people, in a way that sparks their thought, much more than asking them to donate in a nonprofit would have. So I think that's most of what I enjoyed being in ministry was that creative spark that kind of started to come back.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden I had this crisis of faith and needed to leave the church world and realized, what I like doing is writing and connecting people. So you can do that in copywriting. So that became kind of the natural next step out of the church world into the copywriting world. So now I get to write all day, basically. Well, half my days are meetings and half of it's writing, but the meetings are about the writing, so they're still exciting.
Yeah.
Where, you know, we get to infuse story and infuse kind of some psychological hacks, so to speak, not in a sleazy manipulative way, but in a, you know, drawing people in type of way, where I still get to write every day, much more than I did even in the church world, certainly more than the nonprofit world. Where I get to write every day and enjoy what I'm writing. It's not always about me, but that doesn't seem to, I'm not 8 or 9 anymore, so I don't need to make myself the hero of every story. I don't even need to make my client the hero of every story. It's just what can we do to draw people in here and really tell them a good tale?
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, because some of our listeners may be in that point right now where they're needing to pivot. Mm-hmm. And they're finding themselves going like, okay, what I'm doing either isn't working anymore, or for whatever reason, maybe it's the economy, maybe it's whatever reason, they need to pivot into something else. And they're feeling like, I need to get back to that place in me or that thing that really lights me up, where I can make some money at that, but then also like feel more alive in what I'm doing, right? Mm-hmm. That pivot point. So what was that like for you in that moment where you're like, okay, I'm leaving ministry world and I'm heading into this world of copywriting. Mm-hmm. Can you talk us through a little bit of like that pivot and some of just the maybe lessons or concerns or you know, things that people should be mindful of in that setting?
Yeah. 2020 has certainly been the year of the pivot. I think 2021 will be continue that on as well. But for me, it was, so I stuck around in ministry probably a year too long. And the reason I stuck around was because I didn't think I had any transferable skills. I was applying back into the nonprofit world, but and into the business world, but you know, a Bachelor of Arts in Biblical Studies isn't exactly appealing when they're looking for, you know, an MBA or something. So I had no idea. I had no inkling even that I'd be able to find any work anywhere else, because my skills were, I had skills, but they were so limited into the church world. So, and yet, I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't fit a job description, typical job description on a monster.com or whatever. But, then it became about, well, forget looking at a job description. What transferable skills do I have? And those are the ones I just mentioned. You know, I can write, I can create things. I've been doing that three times a week, you know, two Bible studies and a sermon.
A lot of content.
That's a lot of content that I was creating already. And plus on top of that, I had a side consulting business as well while I was in ministry, which it was about church stuff as well. So I'd learned a few marketing lessons there, but even that was more content that I had to create. So I was never using that term at the time, that kind of marketing term of content creation,
right. But
that's what it was.
Yeah.
And so as soon as I heard that term, by learning to market my own side hustle, consulting business, as soon as I heard that term, I realized, oh, I'm creating a lot of content already. I wonder if there's opportunity there. And then it was conversation with wise people, with friends and with wise people, people who know me, who could ask the right questions to help me find, oh, right, I can write content, but I also really like, more than like, I'm drawn to connecting, people. Mm-hmm. And that stems, you know, if we were on the couch again, psychologist couch, it would stem back to those childhood issues of I lacked connection or whatever, but I love connecting people. I love connecting with people deeply. And I love connecting people together as well. And so that was, again, why ministry worked well, because you're connecting, yeah. You're building community, you're doing all that. But again, that was what didn't seem like a transferable skill was a deeply needed skill of connection. People crave connection more than ever right now. There's a you know, before we started using language of pandemic, it was, you know, that we were talking about loneliness being the greatest killer. It's up there with heart disease. Loneliness is the next epidemic, we were saying before 2020. And it was true. There was research saying, you know, it's like increasing mortality rates, you know, like 40% or something. Loneliness is a huge killer. And so connecting people became a very valuable, certainly transferable skill.
Yeah.
It was having people not connecting me with others. I had to do that networking work myself, which was important that I had to do that. But they were helping me connect the dots to, oh, I was doing this, but I can do it this way instead, or I've got the skills I need. I just have to adapt them.
Yeah.
I think that's true for most people. We all, especially if we're creative folks, we've got a lot of skill. We just got to find a way to hone it.
Right.
And it might be the people in our lives who can help us connect those dots.
Yeah. And it might look like something different than what we thought.
Totally. Right?
Because I know even for myself, like there are times when I'm like, oh, well, I like to do this particular act of creation. Therefore, it's going to look like this product or this process. And yet sometimes it's actually maybe two steps further removed from that, where the actual process and product meet the need in the market or in somebody else. And so I need to shift myself a little bit more to go, oh, it's really more like this. And that's then when it starts getting more traction. It's not just enough for me to be like, hey, I like to do this, and so therefore somebody's going to buy it or hire me or whatever, you know?
Yeah. And like I said, the networking piece was still on me, you know, connecting with people who would pay me was still on me. I still had to learn how to do that. I still had to get the credentials for them to want to hire me. But as soon as the connection was clear, as soon as the transferable skills became clear to me, then the rest was just the rest, it kind of just came along. Mm-hmm. You know, the, and I think too, if this had happened to me 10 years earlier, you know, technology wouldn't have been at the place where it was a handful of years ago, where I could just, you know, use the internet and use Google Docs and, you know, I don't need an office. I've got one at home. I've got a computer. I can work from anywhere. And so those things made freelancing becoming much more doable and realistic. And then it became finding a community that actually encouraged me and gave me the confidence to charge more than what I would have been comfortable with, you know, charging $500 instead of 50.
Yeah.
Or eventually $5,000 instead of 500 or whatever. And that comes with, but also that monetary value also comes from, well, I also have a whole lot of decades of writing and creating content experience already. So I kind of know what I'm doing. But it was mostly about that confidence that came from the community. My community of peers, you said, no, you don't need to undersell or undervalue yourself. Charge what you're worth and then go from there. And then prove in the content that you create, in the stuff that I write for them that, oh, that was a good investment. That was good value.
Yeah.
And there's so much all what you asked about, but
no, but I love it. And there's so much in there that you were talking about too, of not just creating in terms of your content, but also creating in terms of like your business, your path forward, your connections with people, being intentional with those things and creating more of the life, if you will, that you wanted to live and the kind of work that you wanted to do. I think so many times people are waiting for either permission or they're waiting for an invitation for somebody to say, yes, now I'm going to invite you into that thing that you always wanted to do, when really that's not the way it works. Mm-hmm. You need to take the initiative. And then when you start showing up consistently, that's when the opportunities start coming, because people start seeing, oh yeah, like this person is really serious about this. They're really passionate about this. They're really gifted in this.
Yeah.
And then you can start to steer things, right?
Mm-hmm. We're so used to, as people, as creatives, we're so used to taking risks creatively, right? Like I look at the wall behind you right now. And even if people are just listening, I'm sure most people know your wall. But that's full of creative risks, right? Or even if the ones on your wall aren't risky, they're certainly not, they're not risque, but you know, they're not risky, but at some point, you know, you're playing with color, you're playing with whatever was initially a risk at least. So we're so used to creative risks, but we forget to include that in our day-to-day or in taking a risk of, oh, I can do this as a job, or I can try that, or I can ask, 50% more in my proposal or whatever. So, we're used to taking those creative risks, but we leave it there, often to our own detriment, that we don't take the risks, transfer those into life as well.
Yeah. There's always something else too, I think, that we can be pushing ourselves towards that can either be another tool in our toolbox, you know, as far as skill set, or experience that can help us and maybe prove to us that, like, oh yeah, you know what, this actually is possible, or this really is valuable for me and for somebody else, you know? I'd love to shift a little bit and talk a little bit about specifically copywriting. And I know you have a podcast, it's, you know, The Psychology of Copywriting, right?
Yeah.
And so I would love to hear a little bit more about that, like why psychology of copywriting, how does that come together? And, you know, talk a little bit about what that looks like for you as far as process.
Mm-hmm. So early on, we already talked about my childhood and that shift that happened. I went from writing to improv and all that. I can't pinpoint it, but another shift happened where I went from being super creative to super logical and analytical. And I don't say that negatively whatsoever. It was just so weird that happened, where I went from writing every day and being creative and being funny to being highly analytical and very logical. So in that sense, that's where like, okay, so psychology and logic and study of the brain became really appealing. But now in my work, I get to do both, right? I get to be creative with writing, but I'm writing in a way that's also based on logic and fact and science. So I'm writing, if it's a story-based email, that's creative, but I also know, well, I'm working in these elements of story in order to trigger the right neurochemicals that I want to get going, that I want to get flowing in order to get them hyped up for what I'm about to pitch, which again, sounds manipulative. It's not, it's just, we do the same thing when we write story, or we paint a painting, or we're trying to evoke emotion, right? We're trying to get cortisol released and get oxytocin released in the brain. That's what we're trying to do. So these two passions of creativity and writing, along with what the heck's going on in the brain, kind of became two things that I could really lean into. And then all of a sudden became, well, oh, I could talk about that. I could do more than just blog about that. I could talk about it. And so, yeah, what we do on my podcast is kind of the exact opposite of yours. We totally geek out on, like literally the first section of every episode is we're going to look at a academic research article, like the kind that we all hated back in university. And we're going to dig into this thing and quote it and talk about the findings and the discussion in the article. So we're going to really unpack that article that may or may not have anything to do with writing. It's usually about neuroscience or psychology or linguistics. And then the second part, the next part of the podcast, every episode is, okay, so what does that mean for the way we write? The way we write copywriting, marketing material specifically. It's been so much fun to dig in. But again, I talked about taking risk. My whole idea in the podcast was, well, I could talk about copywriting. I'm a copywriter. I could do that. It'd be easy. Or I could challenge myself. I could take the risk of leveling up my own game and helping other people level up theirs too. So it's not just that I come in with an outline of what I want to talk about in each episode. I've done 8, 10, 20 hours of research for this 28-minute episode. Which is helping me become better, helping me articulate things better, helping me know why I want to write this way instead of that way. For whatever emotion I want to elicit, for whatever action I want to lead them towards, I need to use this pattern of words or talk about, you know, introduce the story this way or at that point which is totally, like I said, the opposite of what you talk about most times, but it really is. So I say, I end every episode with the same tagline that copywriting is an art, but it's also a science. And what I really mean is if you want to be an amateur, that's absolutely fine. If you want to be passionate about it, about writing, that's totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you want to be a professional copywriter, at least, if you want to be a professional and get paid and paid well for what you do, then it's about more than just writing for fun. It's about more than the art. It's got to be about the science too. So
I like that you mentioned patterns in there too. If I, as a visual artist, want to see something like certain color schemes go together or, a motif that's repeated in something as far as an actual pattern, you know, that is something that I can then employ in my work that can help me. So I like the fact that you're saying, like, think about these things, be intentional with those things, identify what's already been successful, right, for somebody else. And that can be part of your own work. As much as the, hey, I want to make somebody feel, like they're seen or heard. I want to make somebody feel sad or happy or whatever it is that the emotion that I want to evoke through work, right? Leveraging those things that are maybe principles or just a guide, that can really help shape the work. So I like that you talked about that too.
Yeah. And I mean, so there's one episode of the podcast where I think I quote most of it, where I read Ray Edwards, who's a famous copywriter. Mm-hmm. He has this introduction to one of his books that literally says, and it goes on for a couple of pages, but I'll summarize it really quick, where he says, you know, you can use this stuff. This is powerful stuff. You know, in this book, he says, we're going to talk about, you know, hacks and tricks and psychological ploys and all that. You can use that for good, or you can use it for bad. You can use it for real bad. If you want to, if you learn to manipulate people, please don't use it that way.
Yeah.
And so I read that in one episode of mine, where I literally unpack the way that PsyOps uses story to convert terrorists into assets. So you can use story, you can use writing, you can use the patterns that we use in language to really manipulate people. Please don't. Mm-hmm. But you can also use those same patterns, those same stories, those same lessons you learn to turn people away from something that they were doing that was harmful, that was not their best life, to something better, to a better alternative, a more ideal version of themselves, right? If they buy your thing or take your course or whatever.
Yeah.
So you can use it for bad, but you can also use it for real, a lot of good.
Yeah.
And I'm careful to the clients I bring on. They're not jerks. They're not trying to manipulate people. So they don't want me to do that in their writing either. We want to help people.
Yeah. So, I would love to end with one last question, and that would be, what's a piece of advice that someone gave you that you found really helpful, instrumental, either in your writing practice, your creativity, your business, that you can pass along to somebody else today?
I can't think of a particular like quote or thing that somebody told me, but I know the general thought of just believing in yourself and trusting in yourself. I struggle with even still, and I'm fortunate enough. I have amazing clients to make a crap load more money than I could ever imagine having. But it's my friends and colleagues and those close to me who push me on, because I struggle with imposter syndrome quite often. I'm not worthy of these clients. My clients don't think that. My clients think I do a good job. But it's those people around me who push me to greater and greater things that I don't think I'm good enough for, quote unquote, or worthy of, whatever that means. So take the risk, believe in yourself, put yourself out there. You know, if we're married, if we've ever dated someone, we know putting yourself out there is part of the whole process. The same is true in business and in life. You gotta take a risk, gotta put yourself out there, because you're not actually unworthy. You're not actually bad at what you do. And even if you are, you can get better. That's just over the past few years, that's been so huge for me, of people, you know, at networking events, I bring friends along with me, but then they're the ones that push me to go talk to the person that I'm there to actually meet.
Yeah.
That I would have chickened out on before, without those friends around me, or colleagues around me, or people who see me the way I should see myself. You know, they're the ones pushing me to, no, go talk to them, go talk to them. They're the ones connecting me with people that they think I should talk to for work, because they see me, again, the way that I should see me, which is worthy and really good at what I do. Yeah. So, if you don't have those people in your life, you gotta find them. Mm-hmm. You gotta find them. And I know it's hard to socialize right now, but there are ways. If you really want to, there are still ways. There are groups you can join. There are Slack groups you can find. There are masterminds you can pay to be in. There are, you know, free Facebook groups like yours, right? Where you can go and find a community of people that can believe in you, even when you don't believe in yourself. So that's been so important for me.
Yeah. That's a good word for sure. It's the power of community, right? Mm-hmm. We all need each other, and not just to have the people speak into our lives, but also there are people waiting for us to speak into their lives too.
Yep.
So
yeah,
goes both ways for sure.
Yeah.
So where can people find you on the internet? How can they follow along? And if they're curious to check out your podcast, give us some links and some handles.
Yeah. So it's my podcast is called The Psychology of Copywriting Podcast. artwork by Mike Brennan, by the way. Yes. Fantastic artwork. Even if you're not into the psychology stuff, there's still, I think it's episode 2 is the PsyOps one about story structure. That one's fascinating. If you're a writer, go check it out. Go check out episode 2 of that podcast. Just, I found it fascinating. Even though I geek out on this stuff, I really did find it fascinating that, a story is really powerful. And we talk through a structure of story and all that. So go check that out. And then just jeffcoleman.com. If they're writers, if they're working on building their own brand, their own personal brand, as an artist, I've got tons of free resources on my site that they can grab, as well. So yeah, jeffcoleman.com. Don't try to spell my name. I'm sure we'll put it in the show notes.
Yes. Yes, for sure.
It's not spelled right.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for this time today, Jeff. Really appreciate you sharing your journey and just some of your insights, and just sharing yourself with us. So thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Absolutely.
Thanks for listening today. I'd appreciate it if you would subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It really helps this podcast be seen and heard by others.